The Gen X Factor is recorded before a fake studio audience.
Welcome to the Gen X Factor, a podcast about all things 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond for the dazzlingly uncool in all of us. Join us as we take you on a guided tour through the deepest, darkest recesses of our collective generational memories. Could it be dangerous? You better believe it. But we're Gen X. We were built for this.
So, here we go. Getting ready to hit the theme of our season. The last few weeks we've done firsts, first cars, first kisses, etc. Before that,
First seltzer.
Before that, right. We did Different Strokes. So we're going to get back on our theme of sitcoms for this season. But before we do...
I love it.
You love it. Before we do, this show will be airing on Thursday, February 3rd, and that will be the one-year anniversary of the greatest baby brother in the world, Toby's passing. And
somber occasion, but we want to
It's a somber occasion. We want to celebrate it. We definitely want
celebrate
to acknowledge
him,
it.
Not celebrate it, but celebrate him.
Absolutely. And I mean, some of you may know, some of you may not know, but either way, whether you did know or you didn't know, today is the one-year anniversary. Whether that he passed or not, today is the one-year anniversary of that passing. And we love him. We miss him. And when you think of sitcoms and you think of Toby, what do you think of?
Come and knock on our door.
I don't know a much bigger fan of Three's Company than Toby.
He loved Three's Company. I don't even know really how that started, why he liked it so much, but he loved it. And continued to love it in syndication. And that was his favorite. So what a perfect sitcom to talk about on this day.
It is the perfect sitcom to talk about. If for some reason you hear some strange noise while we're doing this this episode, it means that Toby is chiming in, because I guarantee you he is listening.
He's sitting up there in some version of the Regal Beagle, having a glass of beer.
He is.
And every time he takes a swig, he's going, smooth.
So let's talk about Three's Company before we really get into it. As everybody knows that listens to our podcast, that is our generation, and really you get into our parents' generation, they're going to know it. The millennials, they're not going to know Three's Company unless they've seen reruns. And I just don't see reruns that often.
I texted you the other day because I was just flipping through the guide, and IFC had like a all-day marathon of Three's Company, so I watched a couple of episodes.
And prior to when was the last time? Yeah. Just doesn't come on.
It doesn't show up as often as some other shows do, but I see it every now and then. But yeah, it was a good one.
Well, I want to just say just a couple things about it real quick. So it aired from 76 to 84. Now
I think 76 was like some sort of pilot. I think it started 77, didn't it?
Okay, regardless.
Yeah.
It started when Toby was 5. So
right.
I just don't understand how Toby became such a huge fan of this show. And you're thinking, well, it lasted a long time. Okay, when it ended, he was 13.
Yeah, okay. I know. I think, because I don't think that he became a fan when the Ropers were still there. I think he was a Furley generation, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? That particular segment of the... of the sitcom was his wheelhouse.
Yes.
But of course you know they were on in syndication back then.
But I remember watching them on TV. I mean,
we watched them.
Yeah. And I'm sure he
did
too.
And he would have watched them.
Yeah.
He was little, but he probably saw that his big brothers were enjoying it, and so he enjoyed it, cuz you know, it came on, if you recall, it came on after Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
So it was like this perfect, it was almost like, you know, the must-see TV mm-hmm. from the 90s.
Yep.
This was kind of a must-see TV night, and whatever show they were trying to promote, they'd stick after those two big behemoths, right?
And so if you think about show, and that became a behemoth, too.
It became a behemoth.
Let's think about some shows in that era, 76 through 84. You have Happy Days. You have Laverne and Shirley, like you said. Cheers eventually came on. Night Court came on. You know, Cheers and Night Court had some innuendos, some sexual innuendos or whatnot.
Right.
Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, my gosh, they were clean.
Yeah.
Three's Company, filthy. Right?
You know what? Yes, they did deal. It was the swinging 70s kind of, you know, and the disco mm-hmm. era and all that. But really, you know, there was innuendo. There was a lot of innuendo, but I think it was a little more subtle than some of the innuendo on other shows, honestly. Because, like, Jack was a pretty good-natured fella, yes. you know, pretty kind. Now, yep. his buddy, Larry, would insinuate mm-hmm. that he, you know, he was getting around. But, yeah. I mean, if you compare it to the just the blatant sexuality of something like Seinfeld, which came a little while later, it was still very innocent.
And that's why I'm comparing it to the shows of that era. I mean, it's
right.
compared to Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, it wasn't innocent. And like
true.
You said, that became, you know, Larry was part of that. And then,
right.
And look, Larry and Jack were always trying to, you know, to womanize and, you know, they'd get down to the Beagle and whatnot. But could you play this show today in today's woke era? Could you play this show? And I say yes.
I think you could. I mean, where you'd run into some trouble would be sort of the kind of some of the attitudes towards homosexuality, where the theme of it was that they decided to have Jack move into the apartment upstairs because their roommate, the first episode, their roommate was moving out. Jack was a party crasher mm-hmm. that came to her baby shower or something like that and ended up passing out, falling asleep in the bathtub. The Chrissy and Janet discover him the next day. They get to talking. He's got cooking mm-hmm. skills. They don't really have cooking skills. They think, wow, maybe this would work out. You could be our new roommate. But the stodgy, curmudgeonly Mr. Roper, the owner of the complex and their landlord, would never have gone mm-hmm. for that. So they came up with a story to say, well, don't worry about it. There's not going to be any funny business going on. Jack's gay, you know, so
right.
Roper was okay with that, but he would always make little remarks, you know, with his little thumb pinky up in the
yeah,
air,
or
call him Twinkle Toes, or you know, all that kind of stuff. Tinkerbell, I think he called it.
Or there'd be times where he might see Jack kind of talking to a girl and, you know, get a little, hey, now what's going on? And
What's going on here?
So,
and of course, Mrs. Roper was in on it the whole time. And she knew.
She knew. She was much more progressive, I guess,
right,
if you want to say.
Right.
But my whole point is, so yes, you've got one man living with two women,
mm-hmm.
and the only way that he can do so is to pretend to be gay. Now, I'm guessing
right.
the only thing that would fly better these days, as far as that show goes, is it's one man living with two women, and he's gay. Right, I mean, now you have the gay character,
right,
or you know, if Mr. Roper questions it, you know, I guess at that point is Jack can say, "Who are you to tell me what sexuality I am?"
Ah,
right. So,
or
gender. Yeah. I don't. Let's leave it as it is. You know, let's leave it as it is. Let's leave it as. You know, Jack's a womanizer. Larry's a womanizer. Jack could do anything for those roommates. You know, they were close. I don't think it ever became became sexual with any of them. I'm sure that was none
In
of.
In fact, there was an episode where Jack, you know, the like so many sitcoms of that era, it was always there was some misunderstanding or there was he would find mm-hmm. a letter of somebody's that he thought was written. So there was an episode where he thought that Janet had the hots for him and that, you know, wished that something else would develop out of it. And they ended up actually kind of going on like a camping trip to this cabin or something. It was a very, very awkward as Jack Jack realizes that Janet, you know, whatever he had found that made him think that she wanted this to develop into something else, he quickly realized that it was just a misunderstanding, and hijinks ensued, and, you know, well, everything went back to normal.
One of the great things about Three's Company is it was the greatest sitcom that had misunderstandings, and that would be misunderstandings not between, like, two people in the same room. It would be like maybe Mr. Roper is plumbing down in his room, and Jack and Janet might be talking about, well, Janet, I need to put this right there. Well, Jack, if you put that right there, it's not going to feel very good. And, of course, Roper's thinking,
that'll never fit.
Yeah, that'll never fit. Now, Roper's thinking, all right, Jack's upstairs having some, this is bullshit, right? So right. He goes up there to check it out. So it was always people just heard the wrong thing at the right time. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Many a 70s sitcom plot followed that formula.
So I'm going to let you know right now just how into this show Toby was. And he told me this a long, long time ago, and I was just like, I got to verify this before we do this show. So Larry Dallas, right? His name is Larry Dallas.
Yeah.
And Dallas was not his original last name. Right. Do you know it?
Are you? Well, I know that it was like some really long Greek name.
Yes. Okay.
Like Dalopolis, and he said he changed it to Dallas because he couldn't spell Dalliopolis something.
Well, then maybe it was you that told me that. I know.
I think I saw that when I was doing my extensive show research on Wikipedia.
Well, then you just burned me.
Did I spoil you?
You could have given, because now it makes it sound like you knew it too. You know, when I was about to say that Toby told me that his name was Larry Dalapalooas, and he changed it because he couldn't spell Dalapalooas. Well, Toby told me that before the internet. I mean, Toby told me that when he was six. I mean,
I was going to say, I guarantee you, Toby just had that crammed into his gray matter. He didn't have to go out and, you know, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that before like 2 days ago when I thought, we're going to talk about Three's Company. Let's go look at it a little bit, refresh my memory.
You made it sound like you were I want you on my team when we play Jeopardy, Three's Company Jeopardy.
I'm generally a pretty good trivia team member for any kind of like...
I am too.
70s. Yeah, exactly. 70s, yeah. 80s, some of the 90s. I'm your guy.
So let's think of some of the other characters just real quick. We had the Ropers. We had Furley. We'll talk about them all. But we had Larry. We had Jack. We had Janet. We had Chrissy. Do you remember the other two roommates and why they came?
Well, So the reason they came, Chrissy, and this is Wikipedia.
Now, mine's not. I
remember a lot of it. I remember a lot of this. But Chrissy, like, she was raised in a very... like upstanding religious family. I think her dad was a pastor, and she had moved to the big city, you know, from like Fresno or something like that. They always wanted her to come back home.
Okay.
And she decided to go back home mainly so the scriptwriters had a way to settle a big contract dispute with Suzanne Summers, who was asking for a whole lot of money. So they had her cousin, Cindy Snow, come in, who was Jenna Lee Harrison.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to finish this before you do, because I did not research this on Wikipedia.
Okay, I believe you.
And I could have told you that, you know, Jenna Lee Harrison, and she was very much Chrissy-like. I mean, they were both very much from the same family. But there was some sort of something in Suzanne Summers' contract to where if you watch when Jenny Lee or when Cindy came on, if you watch those episodes, and I don't know if it was every one, but there would always be a quick phone call between Chrissy and Cindy. And Suzanne Summers might get 1 minute of airtime. So I'm guessing there was something that said, you have to at least give us this during the contract dispute,
or
we're writing you
off
the show. Yeah, the only way you're going to be able to stay on the show. So, yeah, there was that. And so I don't remember. Do you remember why Cindy left? I don't. I mean, I'm just wondering, but I'll go on to the next one in a minute. But
I don't really remember. I don't remember why she left, but I remember who replaced her. And I would have been able to come up with Jenny Lee Harrison and her name Cindy.
I mean, yeah.
But and then they got another roommate who sort of, I think the writers were kind of feeling like, okay, we've probably done this ditzy blonde thing a little bit too much, and we maybe need to be a little more sensitive about that. So what if we had like a smart Blonde, come on. Right?
Right, right. And it was Terry.
Terry.
Priscilla Barnes, who was a nurse.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, Jack had gone to get a shot earlier in the day and just really didn't hit it off with this blonde nurse.
I think you're right. I think he ended up getting a shot in the tuchus.
He did.
I don't know if it was a tetanus shot or what it was.
Well, when he came home.
She had to give him a shot.
When he came home and met his new roommate, he was like, now, wait a minute. This lady just tried to give me a shot. But, so that was their other roommate. Another
hijinks ensued.
The hijinks ensued. And then there was another character who just loved Jack.
Loved him. I mean, to a fault.
To a fault.
And there was somebody else who really was interested in her, but she wasn't interested in him. Of course, you're talking about Lana.
Lana. Now, was Furley interested in her?
Oh, was Furley ever interested in her? And he never knew. He never kind of got the hint that she didn't like him, because she would say things sometimes that could have had double meanings, like I can't stand you, or maybe I'm playing hard to get. And so he would always like interpret that as she was playing hard to get.
Yeah. So do you remember how Furley got the job as a...
Well, you know, I remember, or did I just read it on Wikipedia?
Well, I mean...
So the building went up for sale.
Yeah.
So the Ropers owned the building, and then they were moving on up to a different, wealthier part of San Diego. Where were they?
I don't know. I just thought they just retired and moved to a duplex.
They moved to a nicer part of town that was one of the early real estate projects of a young George Bluth, Jeffrey Tambor.
We'll
get back to that. But anyway, so they sold the complex to a guy named Bart Furley.
Yep.
Who put his brother Ralph in charge of it.
Yep.
So Ralph being Don Knotts. Now, I don't know, unless I'm derailing where you were hoping to go with this. Let's kind of compare and contrast. Let's talk about Mr. Roper and Mr. Furley.
Okay.
And Mrs. Roper. So Mr. Roper was just a curmudgeon, you know, just couldn't keep his wife happy, just had no interest in her. She had tons of interest in him. That was always a big running joke, is that she just wanted some attention from him and he wouldn't give it. But what was the best thing about Norman Fell's portrayal of Mr. Roper? I'm thinking that to both of us, it's the same thing.
Well, is it when he would say something and just kind of look at the camera?
Yes.
Yeah.
He would break the fourth wall constantly. Like, he'd tell a joke, and then he would, like, look right at the camera and just kind of laugh. And our dad, Pops, kind of did that to us, and we thought it was hilarious. You know, whenever he would tell, like, a dad joke or something, he would kind of turn and do a Mr. Roper
face. But we called him Baines
Conrad Bain, he didn't break the fourth wall, but he would say something, he would kind of get a look on his face, like he was sort of proud of his dad joke, and Pops would do that also. Yeah. And then Mr. Furley was like a completely different character, obviously played by Don Knotts, with the just wild leisure suits that he would wear and his horrible toupee. And
he was kind of the female Mrs. Roper, if you will, as far as the dressing and horniness.
There was an episode one time where somehow he ended up accidentally... Wait a minute. Oh, I think he might have ended up climbing in bed with Mrs. Roper, but I think what actually happened was Mr. Roper... Like, they came back, and he didn't know Mr. Furley had moved in yet or something. I think he might have crawled into bed with Mr. Furley. And then I think Mrs. Roper came in. So
it was probably the episode where Mr. Roper was probably like, you know what, I'm going to give in tonight. And it was Furley. Yeah, right? There was another episode.
He was like, that was not smooth.
Smooth. So do you remember there was an episode where Jack and Larry dated the same girl, but they didn't know it. Jack was telling Larry how awesome his girl was, and Larry was telling Jack how awesome his girl was, and each wanted to meet the other, and it just never worked out. But do you remember how they found out?
I don't.
So Jack had gotten a job as kind of like a mannequin in a department store window.
Yeah.
And so Larry's like, I know where Jack's going to be tonight. You know what? Well, let's go and we'll kind of say hi to him. But this is my girlfriend. And of course, he's like, that bitch is my girlfriend. He's getting real mad doing his little animatronic thing. And
now, John Ritter was just fantastic with physical comedy.
Yes, he was.
He was so gifted with that.
Yes, he was.
I vaguely remember that episode, and I'm sure it was hilarious.
It was good. And then the Regal Beagle was the character in itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good place. You always sort of imagine, like, you'd grow up and you'd have a Regal Beagle. I mean, we don't really live in places where you have, like, a neighborhood tavern. But, I mean, they lived, I think they lived in, like, Santa Monica or something.
They lived off the beach. I know that.
Yeah, they were on the beach. Yeah. But, yeah, so they would just, you know, just head down to the Beagle.
Do you remember the two spinoffs?
I do, and actually, here's something I found really interesting. So there were two spinoffs. There was The Ropers, and then there was Three's a Crowd.
Right, right.
Well, let me tell you something else that I discovered. Now, I knew that this show was based on a British show called Man About the House.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Did you look that up? Yeah, so there was a British show that was the exact same premise. I didn't realize how exact. Like, I went back and like, read about the pilot episode, and it was Chrissy and her roommate, Joe, whose roommate, Eleanor, was pregnant and was moving out. They had a party. This guy, I don't think his name was Jack, might have been, like, Roger or something like that, fell asleep in their bathtub, passed out in their bathtub. He was a cook. It was exactly the same. Landlords were the Ropers, different names. It was
really?
Like George and Rhonda or something. I don't remember, but they were the Ropers. And then it gets even more strange. Like, there were two spinoffs of that show. One was when the Ropers moved out, and it was called, let me look, it wasn't called The Ropers. It was called, let me find it here. It was called George and Mildred. They were George and Mildred Roper. Then there was another spinoff called Robin's Nest. That was Jack's character, Robin.
Okay.
And the premise of that was he had a girlfriend. There was like a Chinese restaurant that had an apartment above it that they thought about renting the apartment. The Chinese restaurant closed. He thought about opening a bistro but couldn't afford it and went into sort of business with his girlfriend's dad, who really didn't care for him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So that was the spinoffs, The Ropers and Three's a Crowd. Isn't that crazy?
So it's
I had no idea of that.
That okay, so I don't think people realize, and I didn't realize this until you actually lived in England and came back.
Yeah.
So many of our sitcoms, so many of all of our shows, but so many of our sitcoms are just stolen from brilliant British sitcoms. So it sounds to me like the idea was flat out stolen from, what was it called again?
Man About the House.
Man About the House. But the fact that the spinoffs were the
same.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe that. Isn't that crazy? Like, they were locked in with this thing.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, so I think, like, the Man About the House ran in England from, like, 73 to 76.
Okay.
So probably about the time that Three's Company was airing here, George and Mildred and Robin's Nest had already kind of spun off. I would assume that they were running in England at the time, so it was like they knew where they were headed with this, I guess.
But, I mean, unless the Ropers were popular characters, they wouldn't have spun that off, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they must have just realized, hey, you know, once it went on and Stanley and Helen were popular enough, they're like, hey, here's our first spinoff. And
well, it definitely doesn't sound like Man About the House was as popular as Three's Company, seeing how Three's Company went 8 years, and this other one you said went 3 or 4.
It's true.
Wow. Wow, that is just, that is hilarious.
Isn't that amazing?
That is cool.
That blew me away. I mean, I kind of liked it a lot, and I kind of didn't like it. I can't decide how I feel about it.
Gosh,
I think I like it.
By the time the Ropers and Three's a Crowd hit, the other one had been off the air for 10 years, probably.
That's true, because they didn't come off until 80, you know, probably like 8. Well, the Ropers would have spun off when Furley joined, which was like 81 or something.
Yeah, you're right.
But Three's a Crowd wouldn't have come until 84 or something, whenever they kind of shut down the show.
What was the name of the guy, the restaurateur that George worked for first? He was on Three's Company. He had a beard. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Who worked for Jack?
Jack did. Like he
Jack worked
he
for?
He was the head chef at Jack's.
Yeah.
He was always kind of hard on him.
He was hard on him. I actually, like, I bet I can find that.
Yeah,
here
see if
real
you can
quick.
Find that, because I
find who the cast member was.
I can totally. I just wondered what the character's name is.
I'll have it here in just a second.
It was Mr.
That's really Mr. good.
Yeah.
It was Mr. something, huh?
There was a little guy named Pepe who worked in the kitchen with him.
Yeah, worked with him.
Yep.
Let's see here. I know I saw that.
It was
somewhere.
Like Mr. Tomasuto like or.
Wow, that might be it. Let me see if I can find it. Boy, this. Dang, where did I see that? There was like a whole thing about the cast. Throw some filler in here, dude.
All right. So let's see here. We were trying to figure out
Yeah. I thought there was something else I was thinking that we needed to touch on, and now I forgot it. This is gripping theater here.
So right now we're just kind of, we can cut this stuff out, right?
Yeah, I think we can cut this stuff out.
No, I mean like us talking, trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, where the heck is that? I remember there was a whole thing
Mr. Tamburino or.
Gosh, I want to find that now just to see if you're right, because you might be.
I think he owned, I don't think they called it Jack's Bistro yet, but.
No, he worked in a, because here's it. So Jack was, do you know his backstory? Jack was like in the Navy.
Okay.
And he was a boxer. He boxed in the Navy. And then he came out and decided to go back to school on the GI Bill and went to culinary school. And then got a job at some restaurant with this character that you're talking about, and then eventually became like the head chef there, and then decided to go out and start his own business.
Well, why was he homeless?
Well, he wasn't homeless. I think he had just gotten out of the Navy. He was living at the YMCA.
Oh, you're right. He was living at the Y.
He was looking for a place to live, and. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then that was where they said, well, heck, why don't you just come and live with us, you know? You can cook. We can't really cook. Frank Angelino was his name.
Mr. Angelino. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you
and
know.
Then, yeah.
So many Mr. of the shows. Angelino. So many of the shows ended. Like, I bet you 5 out of every 8 shows ended with them in their living room there, right?
Yeah.
And everyone else, every other character that is involved in the misunderstanding, the Ropers are probably in there, maybe a date for Janet was in there, and all of a sudden it just, everyone ended with, as soon as everyone left, the Three shut the door, and they're like, oh my God, that was just so close.
They'd kind of like collapse on the couch, you know?
Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
And didn't you think their apartment was just like the epitome of cool, you know?
It was like, tiny.
Yeah, now you look at it and you're like, that's crazy. And then even when the Ropers like were moving to this swanky neighborhood where they were hoping to get in, I mean, it was a tiny little apartment next door to, as we mentioned before, their the head of the homeowners association was Jeffrey Tambor, who really did not like Stanley, and Stanley didn't like him, and Stanley really didn't want to move. So he was trying his best to make Jeffrey Tambor not like him, and that wasn't hard to do.
Now, how long did it seemed like Jeffrey Tambor had a wife and a little bratty kid, too.
Well, he was actually an adorable little kid, but he sort of made an appearance before Jeffrey Tambor. He came over when Stanley and Helen were looking at the apartment and was like, hey, will you play with me? And at one point he like asked him, do you have any candy? And, he, and Stanley was like, whoa, kid, don't get me into trouble here or something like that. And they said, well, you know, my dad will never let you live here if he doesn't like you. And then, you know, Stanley like perks up and looks at the camera like he's got a plan, right? So, you know, Mrs. Roper's just fallen in love with the place. And then Jeffrey Tambor comes over and Helen like goes, I'm going to go have another look at the bathroom or something. And so he's talking to Jeffrey Tambor and says, this spot right here will be perfect for my drums. He's like, oh, you play the drums? Yeah, only when I have my big parties. He's like, oh, you have parties? How often? I don't know, 2 or 3 times a week. He's like, really? He said, yeah, the cockfights are a big draw. You know? So he's got it all set up where they're not going to let him in, you know? And then, like, the wife comes over who's much, you know, less uptight and pretentious, very down to earth. And she and Mrs. Roper hit it off. And then she finds out that her, you know, her husband was sort of keeping him out.
How long was that show on?
Let me look here. I would say probably 2 seasons if I had to guess, but let me look and see if I can tell that real quick. Let's see. Spinoff series, The Ropers. The Ropers ran, oh, actually, like 79 to 80.
Yeah, so maybe one season. Yeah. So here's the problem there. We have discussed when shows finally decide they need a retool. All right, we talked about Different Strokes. Gary Coleman grows up, so you got to bring in the cute kid, the cute little redheaded kid, right? The Brady Bunch, you brought in Oliver. You know, you always bring in the cute kid. When things are going rough, you bring in the cute kid. Well, it sounds like they were so excited or they didn't have a whole lot of confidence in the Ropers, so they started with the cute kid
right from the beginning. That's a good point.
And just like that, the show ends as soon as you bring on the cute kid. I just, as we go through these sitcoms this year, we will learn just about every show ends with the cute kid.
I knew that was your theory, and this just like completely adds credibility to that theory.
So before we do Happy Days for an episode at some point, do you remember the cute kid they brought in there when they jumped the shark? Of course.
Yes, it was a little girl. It was Heather O'Rourke.
Right after Fonzie married, I believe, Linda Perrell, who was a teacher or something, and he finally...
I don't know, but
it was Heather O'Rourke. It was almost like she was almost... But we'll get into that. I mean, that
Heather O'Rourke, obviously, from Poltergeist.
Died very young.
The little girl from Poltergeist
So, yes, it's just funny that shows that are going downhill always seem to bring in the cute kid.
That's right. So, and what's one other thing that's so prevalent in all of these sitcoms that we love in the 70s and 80s is that they all had something really good. What did they all have that was...
The laugh
it's
track?
Kind of a, no, well, that's good too, but kind of a dying thing. You don't have these so much for sitcoms anymore that are as memorable as they were then.
Oh, my God, yes. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about theme songs.
Theme songs.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure everybody in our generation would be able to sing that song. You know, and it was written by a guy named Joe Raposo and was performed by Julia Rinker and Ray Charles.
Huh? What, Three's Company?
Yeah.
Come and knock on our door. Wait, that was Ray, not the Ray Charles.
Not that Ray Charles. That would have been cool, though, huh? But it was performed by somebody named Ray Charles.
Okay.
And when you click on the link in Wikipedia, it says... Not to be confused with the blind R&B singer or something.
It definitely wasn't like, come and knock on my door.
Wouldn't that have been awesome, though?
Yeah, it would be awesome.
That's what I say.
That song would have been, come see if you can find my door.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. It was definitely fun recording today's episode, knowing that Three's Company was Toby's favorite show. But the show meant a lot more to us than Three's Company. Toby, we miss you. You were the greatest baby brother everyone I know loved you. And whenever you and Rocky and I were in a room, it was definitely Three's Company. To you, my man, I tip my drink. Cheers.
Listening to the Gen X Factor Podcast, your home for all things 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond, because we realize there's a little Gen Xer in all of us. We also realize we're all a little bit dazzlingly uncool. Not sure what that means? Go out to www.rockysealmusic.com and find out. Do you think you might be dazzlingly uncool? Well, if you found your way to this podcast, chances are you may be, or you will be one day. Check us out on our socials. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and you can find special video segments on our YouTube channel called Rocky Seal Music. Stay tuned every Thursday for new podcast episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good Lord.